located in the headquarters of one of the largest U.S. grocery store chains. He faced two major challenges. First, he didn't know the buyer's name or have any contact information other than the main phone number, and he didn't know the title of the person. All he knew was that there was someone in corporate who made those decisions. He tried calling and asking for the person who makes decisions on broadband services, but that had gotten him nowhere. No matter how many times he asked or how much he pleaded, he hit a wall over and over again. "I'm sorry, sir, we don't give out that information." "No, sir, I cannot connect you if I don't have a name." Frustrated but determined, he kept at it. He called stores, did online searches, combed LinkedIn, and slowly but surely began to string small clues together. He narrowed his search down to a handful of possible titles, but was still missing a name. He finally caught a break when, out of desperation, he started calling random extensions. On one of those calls, a friendly person gave him a hand, and that yielded yet another clue. "Yeah, I think a guy named Jack over in IT handles that." "Well, thanks for the information. Do you know his last name or extension?" "Sorry, I don't, but I can transfer you back to reception and maybe they can help you." Evan's heart sank. So far, reception had been his Waterloo. He crashed and burned on every call. When reception answered, he said, "Hey, I was talking to Dale Jones in purchasing, and he was transferring me to Jack in IT, but somehow I ended up with you. Would you mind sending me over?" "Hmm," said the receptionist. "I'm not seeing a Jack. Did you mean Zach Friedman?" Boom. He had a name. "Yes, sorry about that. I thought I said Zach." "Okay, no problem. I'm sending you over now." "Before you do, would you mind giving me Zach's extension just in case we get disconnected?" "Sure, it's 5642. I'm transferring you now." Evan ended up in Zach's voicemail, but eventually got through and established a relationship and a beachhead with what became his largest customer. The salespeople help salespeople hack. 2 weeks ago, I ran across a prospect that was a perfect fit for my business. I'd learned that they were hiring 30 new sales reps. They were going to need someone to help them source, hire, and train all those new salespeople, and I figured it should be sales gravy. Unfortunately, I had no idea who the decision makers were at the company. I called the phone number on the website, and after finally getting past the long automated message, I ran headfirst into a rude and brutal gatekeeper who refused to give me any information. I did a search on LinkedIn and Google, but came up empty. I tried once more to plead my case to the gatekeeper. Then after she hung the phone up in my face mid-qualifying question, I was right back where I started, basically nowhere. That was when I used one of my favorite sales hacks for reaching hard-to-reach prospects. I dialed the main number again. The automated message said, "Press 1 for the sales department." So I pressed 1. Two rings later, an enthusiastic voice answered the phone. "This is Mike. Can I help you?" I responded, "Hi, Mike. My name's Jeb Blunt. The reason I'm calling is I'm trying to reach the person in your company who buys training programs. I wasn't having much luck going through the switchboard, and I figured a fellow salesperson like you could relate and might give me a hand." Mike was instantly empathetic. "I know what that's like. I've been having the same problem all morning. The person you're looking for is Jean. She's our VP of sales, and the best way to get her is on her mobile phone. Hold just a second, and I'll get it for you." Mike and I shot the breeze for a few more minutes, commiserating about gatekeepers. He also gave me the scoop on why they were growing, the sales role they were hiring for, and complained about the company's non-existent sales training program. My very next call was to Jean, who answered the phone on the second ring. Mike's information proved very powerful in helping me relate to Jean's issues. After a 15-minute conversation, Jean agreed to a next appointment and promised to include her company president. That meeting went very well, and it opened the door to a formal proposal. The Salespeople Help Salespeople hack is an awesome secret weapon. It has worked for me time and again when I've had a hard time getting to the right person in a prospective account. It's effective for several reasons. First, most sales organizations pick up their phones, so there is a high probability that you will have the opportunity to speak to a live human being. Next, salespeople tend to know who's who in their organizations and how to get in contact with those people. And finally, salespeople help other salespeople because they have all stood in your shoes. They know what it's like to hit a brick wall. If you are honest, polite, and respectful, and bring a little humor and humility with you, they'll often open doors that would have been very difficult to open on your own. The go-around-the-back hack. If you are prospecting in person and the receptionist refuses to give you any information, try going around the back. Often, there are people there loading and unloading, on breaks, or walking to their cars. If you approach them in a transparent, non-aggressive way, sometimes they will give you information or even walk you in to meet the decision maker. Now, here's an important note. Do not try this if there are security guards or other measures present with the express objective of keeping unauthorized people like you out. Persistence always wins. There are always going to be decision makers and contacts who are hard to reach. Always. Very often, these are conquest, strategic, and high-value prospects. These are the prospects that every sales rep in your industry wants to set an appointment with. It's important to understand that the more valuable the business opportunity, the more likely that the prospect will be walled in by gatekeepers. These prospects drive you crazy. You can't seem to find the name of the right person to talk to. They don't answer the phone, are always in meetings, don't return calls, don't respond to emails, don't accept connection requests on LinkedIn, and never fill out lead forms. These hard-to-reach contacts always seem impossibly elusive. Welcome to the real world. It takes hard work and a whole lot of persistence to get to some contacts and decision makers. So just remember, in sales, persistence always wins. Always. Chapter 18. In-person prospecting. Nothing replaces being in the same room, face-to-face. Peter Guber. Kelly is a rental uniform services sales representative. His primary role and responsibility is selling new accounts. He is the top rep in his region and has been awarded a President's Club trip each of the last 6 consecutive years. According to his sales manager, what sets Kelly apart from his peers is relentless prospecting. Each day, Kelly invests an hour prospecting by phone. His goal is to set 2 to 3 appointments with qualified prospects. Once Kelly has his appointment set, he researches his database for 3 to 5 additional prospects that are nearby each of those preset appointments. Then, using the mapping tool embedded in his CRM, he creates an efficient route to each of the prospects in relation to the preset appointment. Finally, he does a little research on each of these prospects to gain an understanding of what they do and remind himself of previous conversations. He also uses the social channel, usually LinkedIn, to gather additional information and download pictures of the key players at the location. This research helps him develop and refine his approach before calling on these appointments in person before or after his preset appointment. Since most of his prospects are located in industrial parks or close to other businesses, he also leverages a technique called a T-call. When he goes to his preset appointments and planned in-person prospecting calls, he makes a T by looking to the right, to the left, and behind him for other opportunities, newly opened businesses, or businesses that are not currently in his database. And then he walks into those doors as well. This strategy of mapping his in-person prospecting or IPP calls around his appointments and leveraging T-calls maximizes his day. He's able to go to high-valued planned appointments while also making 10 to 20 face-to-face prospecting touches. He says he's able to convert about 30% of his IPPs into future appointments, gets information on most of them that allows him to update his database, and once or twice a week he meets a decision maker who is ready to sit down immediately and begin a sales conversation. Kelly told me he also uses IPPs to move past gatekeepers who block him on the phone. Many times when I go in face-to-face, I can either appeal directly to the gatekeeper to give me a chance or walk in the back door and act like I'm lost. It's harder for them to turn me away when I'm there in person. Limited application of the in-person prospecting call. In-person prospecting is part of a balanced prospecting approach for outside sales reps. It works best for residential B2C and B2B reps who work in a local territory and sell transactional to semi-complex products and services, primarily to small and medium-sized businesses, where it is easy to walk in without bumping into a wall of security. I have leveraged IPP calls at large plants and companies, but primarily for information gathering by pumping the security guards or gatekeepers for information about decision makers and my competitors. Of all the prospecting channels, in-person prospecting is the least efficient. Driving around in a car and knocking on doors takes a ton of time. Done incorrectly and randomly, the way far too many outside sales reps do it, you can burn an entire day, make very few calls, and accomplish little more than wasting gas. On the scale of hot to cold, they're also mostly cold. This is why the IPP call should only be used to supplement and complement other forms of prospecting. With the exception of T-calls, and when driving by a new business in your territory you've never seen before, they should be planned in advance. Yet there are scores of outside salespeople for whom in-person prospecting is their primary and sometimes only prospecting channel. This is mostly due to a false belief that driving around their territory aimlessly is somehow working, managers who believe that the only good salesperson is a salesperson they can't see, and the most common, a fear or inability to use the phone justified with, "I'm just better in person." When I confront salespeople who justify not using the phone with how they are so much better in person, I ask this simple question. It's the middle of winter and snowing, or the middle of summer and blazing hot and humid. You spend the entire day doing IPP calls. How many calls do you think you'll actually make? The truthful answer is somewhere between 10 and 20 before they would give up and go home for the day. Then I ask, if I gave you a printed list of prospects, how many telephone prospecting calls could you make to those same businesses in just an hour? The truthful answer is somewhere between 25 and 50. This usually gets their attention long enough for me to show them how to leverage IPPs within a balanced prospecting routine to maximize and get the most out of their sales day, to be both efficient and effective. The five-step hub and spoke technique. Casey sells supplies to restaurants. Because competition in her segment is so fierce, maintaining relationships with her accounts is critical to driving repeat purchases. Each day, she is required to visit at least four existing accounts in person. Like Kelly from the previous story, once Casey sets the appointments to visit her existing accounts, she uses the CRM to identify prospects close to those accounts and map out a route that allows her to call on those prospects in conjunction with her appointment as efficiently as possible. She typically maps out 3 to 5 calls around each appointment, which gives her 15 to 20 in-person prospecting touches a day with new opportunities. She is also able to leverage her existing relationships in the neighborhood to convince new prospects to give her a chance. Casey explained, "Before I started using the hub and spoke process, I was all over the board. I'd just drive around with no plan. I spent way too much time in my car looking for the perfect prospect to call on rather than systematically working my territory." The hub and spoke process has helped her open more new accounts than any other account manager in her company. The five-step hub and spoke system for IPPs goes like this. First, you plan IPPs around preset appointments. Start with appointments you set during your phone block. Next, you leverage your CRM to develop a list of prospects close by. A zip code search is often the best means to do this. Then, you plot 3 to 5 prospects on a map around your preset appointments. Next, you develop the most efficient driving route to call on these planned IPPs with the least amount of windshield time. And finally, you want to give yourself enough time between appointments before or after to call on these prospects face-to-face. And don't stop until you reach your goal. Leveraged effectively, IPPs will help you squeeze every drop of opportunity out of your sales day. Preparing for effective in-person prospecting. Develop your objective for each call in advance, and then, if possible, personalize your approach to each prospect. This is accomplished through pre-planning. The 6 key objectives of in-person prospecting include, 1, qualifying. In many cases, people will give you more information in person than they will over the phone. Plus, you get to look around to see where your product or service will help them and gain insight on your competitor. Number two, making appointments. If you've got the right person in front of you, but the timing isn't right for a sales conversation, set an appointment to come back. Number three, sales conversations. You are there, the decision maker is there, and a problem or need exists. Sometimes your timing is perfect and an IPP turns into a full-fledged sales call. Always be prepared to close. Number four, building familiarity. By putting a face with a name with both gatekeepers and decision makers, it becomes easier to get an audience in the future when the buying window opens. Number five, maximizing your sales day. The biggest benefit of in-person prospecting is you get the most out of your sales day by reducing windshield time and increasing the number of prospecting calls you can make. And number six, learning your territory. IPPs help you learn, know, and own your territory. The primary objective of the IPP is to gather information. You will use this information to further qualify your database and create targeted lists for your phone, email, and social prospecting blocks. Of course, in the best case scenario, you'll start the conversation right on the spot if the opportunity to potentially close a deal exists. This past summer, I was riding with Carl, a business services sales rep. We just walked out of a scheduled appointment, and he decided to call on the other four businesses that were in the same industrial park. He was making tea calls. The first two calls were quick. We gathered some basic information about the decision makers and the competition. But on the third call, the owner of the business overheard us speaking with the receptionist and came out of his office. He shook our hands and explained how he had just fired Carl's competitor and was happy that we'd come by. He ushered us back into his office and started tossing out questions, and he wanted to see a presentation. If he'd had a neon sign over his desk that said, "Close me," the buying signals could not have been stronger. Unfortunately, though, Carl was not prepared to close. In an awkward moment, he had to explain that he did not have the material needed to make the presentation. Carl asked to come back later, but the gentleman said he was leaving for a conference and then would be on vacation. He said, "Just call me in a couple of weeks and we'll get things set up then." But when Carl called back 2 weeks later, the business owner broke the news that he'd signed a contract with another company that had beaten Carl to the punch. When you walk through your prospect's door, you've got to be ready. Have an objective for each call. Pump yourself up so you walk and talk with confidence and enthusiasm and carry everything in that you will need to close the sale in the event that your timing is right. I realize that it's a pain to haul your sales material in on every call, especially when you know the chance of closing a deal is small. What you must never forget is sometimes you only get one chance with a prospect. So make sure when that happens, you are ready. There are five steps to planning for effective IPPs. Number one, research. With planned IPPs, do your research in advance to get decision-maker names, learn about the history of their business, visit their website, look for recent press releases, and review your CRM for notes and other insights. For T-calls, grab your smartphone and do a quick scan of their website and social media sites to glean any information that may help you ask better questions and refine your approach. Number two, personalize your approach. Personalize your approach to make it unique to each prospect. Develop relevant questions about their business, compliment them on recent accomplishments, or offer insights that may help them solve a particular problem. It's also a good idea to leverage the relationships you have with nearby customers to gain instant credibility. For example, you might say, "We've been doing business with Billy next door for 5 years, and he loves our service." Number three, develop an objective for every call. Before you walk into your prospect's door, make sure you have clearly defined what you want to accomplish. Number four, be prepared to close. Be ready. Make sure you have everything you need to close the deal with you: sell sheets, order forms, contracts, presentation material, and so on. And number five, log calls, notes, and set follow-up tasks in your CRM. It does you absolutely no good to go on IPPs and gather information if you don't log the information into your CRM and set follow-up tasks for additional research and callbacks. Take the time to log each IPP and enter notes before the close of each day. And if you have the time, do it on the spot. The five-step in-person prospecting call process. The in-person call process is similar to the five-step telephone prospecting framework. The main difference between the in-person framework and the phone process is the IPP will move along at a slower pace and there will typically be more dialogue. Step 1. Approach with confidence. As we discussed in previous chapters, there is no substitute for enthusiasm and confidence. These are the two emotions that sell. You must approach IPPs with absolute confidence. Be bold, even if you have to fake it. I've found that there are two keys to confidence. First, expect a win. Walk in like you own the place and ask direct questions that help you gather information and get in front of decision makers. Next, plan questions in advance. The research you do in advance helps you plan the questions you want to ask about problems, issues, decision makers, and competitors. Having a plan gives you an extra boost of confidence as you walk in the door. Step 2, identify yourself and say why you are there. Don't beat around the bush, don't hesitate, and never use cheesy lines designed to trick gatekeepers. You are a professional, so be straightforward and transparent about your purpose for being there. You might say, "Hi, my name is Jeb Blunt. I'm with XYZ Company. The reason I'm here is ABC Company next door is one of my customers, and they said I should stop in and introduce myself to your owner, Mary." You could say, "Hi, my name is Jeb Blunt. I'm with XYZ Company. The reason I stopped by is I work with several other businesses in this industrial park, and I wanted to learn more about your company and situation to see whether or not working with you might be a good fit." Or you could say, "Hi, my name is Jeb Blunt. I'm with XYZ Company. The reason I stopped by is to speak with Jerry Richards. I've been following your Facebook page and noticed that you were doing regular promotions. We have a tool that can help you improve the impact of those promos and generate more leads. I want to ask Jerry a few questions to see if our solution might be a fit." Step 3. Gather information. You want to engage in a conversation rather than an interrogation. 80% of human communication is visual. IPPs are powerful because, unlike most other prospecting channels, you use all of your senses to communicate. You'll be most effective when you be yourself, relax, ask open-ended questions that encourage others to talk, listen, and engage in meaningful conversations. Avoid the temptation to pitch. You will quickly lose the attention of your prospect if you begin talking about you, your company, your product, or your service. As soon as you start pitching, your ears turn off, and so does your prospect. Sales trainer Kelly Robertson says, "It may sound simple, but most salespeople don't get it. They still believe that selling means talking at great length about their company, their product, or their service. However, truly effective salespeople understand that it's all about asking the prospect the right questions and demonstrating that you can help them solve a particular problem or issue. This means you need to direct all of your attention on their situation and resist the opportunity to talk about your company or your offering. Consider what it feels like to be on the other end of a conversation where someone is just talking about themselves. It's boring. As soon as you start pitching, you look and sound just like every other salesperson who walks through your prospect's door. Your prospect can tell that you care about nothing other than getting what you want, and that is why they zone out, make you feel uncomfortable, and put up emotional walls. However, when you get them talking about themselves, show interest, give them your complete attention, and listen, they will engage, give you information, and look for ways to help you. Before every IPP call, make the conscious decision to focus your attention on your prospect. Tell yourself to listen instead of pitch. Make a commitment to slow down and ask questions. Really listen to the answers and ask relevant follow-up questions. Step 4. Ask for what you want. If you don't ask, you won't get. Decide what you want to ask for before you walk in the door, and be prepared to bridge to something else, like closing the deal, if the opportunity presents itself. Step 5. Turn around RBOs. Because you are interrupting, you are going to get RBOs. Develop and prepare turnarounds in advance. Take a few minutes to review the previous chapter on turning around RBOs for techniques that will help you get past objections and into sales conversations. Put your sales goggles on. I was on a sales call with Madison. She left her appointment with Dr. Roberts, walked straight to her car, and got in. And as we drove away, I asked, "What about all the other doctors in that complex? Why didn't we call on them too?" Sales reps like Madison walk out of appointments and right past what might be their next sale without even blinking an eye. They usually mumble something about not having enough time or lunch or some other lame excuse, but the real truth is they're oblivious. They are myopic and blind to the opportunities that are often right next door to their prospect. That's why you've got to put your sales goggles on so you can see these opportunities. This is how fanatical prospectors do it. They train themselves to be acutely aware of the opportunities around them. They are always on, looking around every corner, behind every bush, and in every window for their next prospect. Look to the left, to the right, and behind you every time you walk into or come out of an appointment, and make it a point to walk through those doors and gather information. Likewise, remain aware as you drive from place to place in your territory. New prospects and opportunities are everywhere. When you see a new business, new construction, or a company you've never noticed before, put your sales foot on the sales brake, get out of your car, and walk through those doors. Look for the names of businesses on delivery trucks and signs. If the trucks are parked, stop and quiz the drivers. You'll be amazed at how much information they will give you about the business, decision makers, buying windows, and your competitors. Personally, I make it a practice to speak to every person I meet who is wearing a uniform or logoed shirt with the name of their company on it. I ask them about their company and who makes decisions there. They almost always know the decision makers and can often tell me where my competitor is failing. I also talk to the person next to me when I'm waiting in line, sitting in waiting rooms, on trains, buses, and airplanes. Over the past 5 years, I've generated more than $500,000 in business just from these conversations. Keep your eye out for business cards pinned to gas station and restaurant bulletin boards. When I see cards that match my company's vertical, I grab them, call them, qualify, and add the information to my database. If you don't have time to stop and walk into a business or chat up a delivery driver, use that amazing tool in your pocket called a smartphone. When you are driving down the road and you see the name of a potential prospect on a sign or truck, just record a voice memo or a note to yourself. Use your camera to take pictures of signs, new business locations, and the sides of trucks. When you get back to the office, do a little bit of research, create a prospecting list, and pick up the phone to qualify or set an appointment. It's also important to remain alert for businesses and people that are using a product or service similar to what you sell. Recently, when working with a group of mobile device sales reps, I asked a simple question. How many of you notice people using mobile phones in public? All the hands went up. How many of you notice people using outdated phones or phones with cracked and damaged screens? Again, all the hands went up. How many of you think that most of these people would like an upgrade to the newest equipment or a phone screen that doesn't look like a kaleidoscope and cut their fingertips? Most of the hands went up. How many of you stop, introduce yourself, and hand those people a business card and let them know that you can get them a new phone for little or no cost? Not a single hand went up. So here's my final point. Awareness without action is useless. Be fanatical. Put on the sales brake. Walk up to people. Ask questions and hand them your business card. Sure, some people might get irritated, but most people will help you, talk to you, and at least give you a chance. Chapter 19. Email Prospecting. Your email inbox is a bit like a Las Vegas roulette machine. You know, you just check it, and every once in a while, there's some juicy little tidbit of reward, like the three quarters that pop down on a one-armed bandit. and that keeps you coming back for more. Douglas Rushkoff. Email is a powerful part of a balanced prospecting approach, and when leveraged intelligently, it opens doors, gets results, and generates far more engagement and response than social prospecting. When I say far more, I mean 10 to 20 times more. It also has the added benefit of extending your prospecting window, which makes you more efficient. With the many email communication tools that are available, including Yesware, HubSpot Sales Pro, Tout, Tellwise, and your own CRM, you can create emails outside the golden hours and schedule them to go out during prime selling time while you're on the phone or face-to-face with prospects and customers. The data these tools provide also make your email prospecting efforts more effective because you can test and measure response rates. This helps you hone and perfect your message. And once you have a message that you know works for a particular market vertical or group of similar prospects, you can send it out with minimal effort. It's also easier than ever to build a database of email addresses. Besides just asking for them, you can grab email addresses through Google searches, social media, scraping programs like eGrabber's Email Prospector, various apps and browser plugins, and tools like Twofer and ProspectAce that help you make educated guesses on email addresses for prospects when you don't have them. Email has also moved beyond the traditional inbox and into the social channel. The LinkedIn inbox, Facebook Messenger, and direct messaging on Twitter are often used as proxies, supplements, or complete replacements for traditional email. The benefits of the social channel include skipping past gatekeepers, avoiding the spam box, and the ability to send email to prospects even if you don't know their email address. The downside of email, in all forms, is if you irritate your prospect by sending them spam-laden crap, they'll block or unfriend you in a heartbeat. The rules and techniques in this chapter apply to both traditional and social email prospecting. Email done wrong wastes your time, makes you look like a chump, and exasperates your prospects. My goal with this chapter is to give you a set of tools, techniques, and formulas that will instantly make your prospecting emails more impactful and generate better results. These techniques are just a snapshot of the available information on email prospecting. You can find more resources for email prospecting techniques at fanaticalprospecting.com. The three cardinal rules of email prospecting. Effective email prospecting requires thoughtfulness and effort to get the message right. Email done right is an extremely powerful prospecting methodology that will generate a consistent stream of qualified prospects that keeps your pipeline full. Effective begins with adhering to the three cardinal rules of email prospecting. Rule number one, your email must get delivered. This means that your email must make it into your prospect's main email box. Most companies and individuals today have filters set up to either block or move spam emails into a junk folder. In some cases, entire IP addresses may be blacklisted when too much email that is considered spam emanates from that server or address. There is no perfect science to staying completely clear of spam filters. However, there are things you can do to increase the probability that your email will get delivered. Now, this is not a comprehensive list, but rather a list of the most obvious and important tactics. First, don't send bulk email. Prospecting email is one-to-one. It is an email from your address sent to one individual, one email at a time. This alone should help you clear 90% of spam hurdles. Sending bulk email, that is email sent to multiple people from your personal email address, is the easiest, fastest way to get blacklisted, get blocked, and look like a total imbecile. Next, avoid attaching images. Because hackers and spammers embed malware in images, many email programs mark emails with images as spam or block images until permission is given to download. Your best bet on prospecting emails is to avoid sending images. Likewise, you want to avoid hyperlinks. The primary tool of hackers is the hyperlink. You click on it, and the hacker inserts malware on your computer and steals your information. Because of this, people are suspicious of hyperlinks embedded in emails. Your best bet is to avoid hyperlinks altogether in prospecting emails because they also trigger spam filters. If you do include a link, avoid embedding the URL in the text. Include the entire URL for complete transparency. Avoid shortened URLs that obscure the website address, and limit the total number of URLs to one, including any links in your email signature. Next, avoid attachments. Hackers have become adept at using attachments to infect computers with malware, hack websites, and infiltrate networks. Because of this danger, spam filters may grab your email if it contains attachments. Your best bet is to avoid sending attachments in prospecting emails. Skip spammy words and phrases. What you say and how you say it can trigger spam filters. For example, using all caps in a subject line, adding lots of exclamation points, using words like free or special buy now can light up spam filters like a Christmas tree. Kevin Gao, CEO and founder of Com 100, lists 200 words and phrases that he says trigger spam filters when placed in email subject lines, including amazing, free access, cash, don't, delete, do it today, increase sales, 100% guaranteed, and save money while using the dollar sign. The point is, you must be careful and thoughtful about the words and symbols you use and how you phrase those words, especially in your email subject lines. The best thing to do is step into the spammer's shoes, look at the annoying spam you get, and then do the opposite. Next, don't send email to too many people in the same company at one time. Spam filters look to see how many messages you're sending at a time. This is primarily designed to catch bulk emailers who are sending to large lists. However, if you are sending email to multiple prospects in the same company, it pays to drip these emails in at different times a day rather than sending them all at once. Next, don't send too many emails to the same person. This may seem counterintuitive, but with email, too much persistence can hurt you. If you become annoying, the recipient of your email can mark it as spam. This may impact more than just their individual inbox, because with some systems, this may get you blacklisted across the entire enterprise. It's also important to scrub bounces. Many email filters will catch you if you send multiple emails to an email address that doesn't exist. This usually happens when the person you are trying to contact no longer works at the company or you have a bad email address. When you get a bounce, view it as an opportunity to gather better information. First, update the contact in your CRM and remove the email address so you won't mistakenly send to that address again. Next, check LinkedIn or do a Google search to find out if that contact is still at the company. If not, remove the contact from your CRM or update their record to reflect their new company. If yes, get to work by phone or online finding an accurate email address. And finally, be careful with sensitive industries. Use extra caution when contacting sensitive industries like financial institutions, defense contractors, and healthcare. Hackers are relentlessly trying to get into these organizations to steal data, and as a result, there are strict firewalls in place. I recommend using text only with no links, attachments, or images when sending email to these organizations. Rule number 2. Your email must get opened. Here's a fact of life. According to Harvard Business Review, the average business executive gets 200 plus emails a day. Add to that the mail they get in their social media inboxes, instant messages, and the chatter on crowdsourcing tools deployed by many companies, and there is simply no way they can possibly get to it all. So your prospects cope with being crazy busy and overwhelmed by an inbox that is set to infinite refill the same way you do. They scan and triage. They, like you, must make instant split-second decisions to open, delete, or save for later. In this paradigm, to get opened, your prospecting email must stand out from all the noise and be compelling enough to entice a click. Familiarity gets your email opened. One way to stand out is familiarity. Imagine that you are scanning your inbox. An email from a person you recognize catches your eye. What do you think is your most probable next action? The law of familiarity is always in play with email prospecting. The more familiar your prospect is with your name, brand, or company, the more likely they are to open your email. This is why leveraging the phone and social channels prior to sending an email can increase the chances of getting your email opened. For example, you might call and leave a voicemail, then ping them on LinkedIn, and then follow that up with an email. This triple threat increases familiarity and leverages your persistence across multiple channels. The layering of channels to build familiarity is extremely powerful. If you leave an effective voicemail and they hear your name and company name, then when they see your name and email address in their inbox, you will be more familiar. If you connect with them on a social channel and like, share, or positively comment on something that they have posted, this increases the probability that your email will get more than a cursory glance when it hits your prospect's inbox. If you meet them in person at a trade show or networking event and leave a positive impression, then connect with them on LinkedIn, follow that up with a voicemail, then send an email, the probability that your email will get open improves exponentially. Layering prospecting channels to open more doors should be focused, targeted, intentional, and strategic. You need to plan your touches across the various decision makers and influencers to improve email open rates without becoming annoying. Your subject line must scream, "Open me." The subject line, however, depending on the level of familiarity your prospect has with you, can be the most important key to getting your email opened. Sadly, though, most prospecting email subject lines neither stand out nor are compelling. Most, in fact, scream, "Delete me." There are three common subject line mistakes. First, they're too long. Data from many sources across the sales ecosystem prove that shorter subject lines outperform longer subject lines by wide margins. Frankly, it's intuitive. A long subject line requires your prospect's brain to work harder. That extra effort in the context of split-second decisions about the value of an email gets you deleted. Long subject lines also don't play well on mobile. It's estimated that 50% or more of emails get opened on a mobile device. With the limited screen size, you get but a glimpse of the email subject line. And if you think about your own behavior on your mobile phone, you were even quicker to delete a message there. More than 50 characters in your subject line and the open rate goes down exponentially. So the solution is keeping email prospecting subject lines super short. 3 to 6 words or 40 to 50 characters, including spaces. Remember, less is more. Next, your email subject line includes questions. Email prospecting subject lines in the form of questions are delete bait. Virtually every study conducted on the efficacy of different types of email subject lines conclude that subject lines in the form of a question doom your email to the delete button death roll. Though there may be a time and place for using a question in your email subject line, in most cases, you should step away from the question mark. The solution is to use action words and directive statements instead of questions. List-based subject lines that include a testimonial like, "Three reasons why ABC company chose us," are especially powerful, as are referral subject lines like, "Jeb Blunt said we should talk," and statement-based subject lines like, "The biggest fail in industrial pumps." And finally, subject lines that are impersonal or boring. Generic, impersonal subject lines are boring. When you are attempting to engage a hard-to-reach executive, a failure to connect will send your email straight to the trash bin. Think about it. Every salesperson in your industry is trying to connect with the highest value prospects in your market. These executives are inundated with requests for appointments. You will never break through this noise and get their attention with cheesy and personal subject lines. Instead of standing out, you will look like all of the other schmucks junking up your prospect's inbox and wasting their time. The solution is to connect your subject line to an issue your prospect is facing, especially if it's emotional or stressful. Or you can compliment them on a recent accomplishment or something that you know makes them feel proud. For example, the easiest, fastest way to get me to open your email is a subject line that reads, "Loved your book." You can also use relevant humor or tongue-in-cheek phrases to catch your prospect's attention when appropriate. One of the participants in a recent email prospecting workshop created the subject line, "Keep those kegs rolling," for an email he crafted to send to a beer distributor. It was relevant, connected with his message, and was sure to catch the eye of his recipient. We are all self-centered and almost always focused on our own problems, issues, accomplishments, and ego. The fact is, 95% of the time we are thinking about ourselves, and the 5% of the time that we are not thinking about ourselves, something, maybe a mouthy salesperson, has gotten in the way of us thinking about ourselves. So play the odds and make your subject line about your prospect. It's really easy to do this if you take a little extra time to research the recipient of your prospecting email through an internet search, company website, or social media site. No one-size-fits-all solution. The brutal reality, though, is there is no secret formula for creating the perfect email subject line every time. What works in one situation may not work in another. Advice that works in one industry vertical may not be applicable within your industry or prospect base. This is why experimentation and testing are the real secrets to success with subject lines. Testing helps you zero in on which subject lines get the most opens. With this data in hand, you'll often find patterns that lead to subject lines that work phenomenally well with certain prospect groups, job titles, geographic areas, and business problems. Yet, most salespeople don't test. Instead, they create subject lines on the fly and then send their emails into a black hole, hoping they'll get a response. It's an incredibly frustrating way to prospect because it's like throwing darts at a target while blindfolded and hoping you'll hit a bullseye without any feedback to let you know if your aim is true. There are fantastic tools available today that make testing email response rates unbelievably easy and affordable. Email prospecting automation and intelligence services like Yesware, Tellwise, and Tout give you instant insight into what happens with your prospecting email after you push send. With this information, you'll be able to narrow down and home in on the words and phrases that get the best response, and your emails will stand out and get opened, while those your competitor sends are relegated to the delete folder. Rule number 3, your email must convert. Unless you are sending pure spam, meaning generic email templates that are copied and pasted then sent randomly to a large swath of prospects regardless of relevance and with no research, developing and crafting prospecting emails takes a significant investment of time. With conquest prospects, C-level contacts, and strategic campaigns, you will need to personalize each email message. Thought and effort will be required to craft a relevant email that connects with the recipient emotionally and moves them to take action. This doesn't mean that every email you send must be built from scratch. Certainly, within specific industry verticals, markets, and decision-maker roles, there will be enough common ground and patterns that you'll be able to develop templates that can be mass-customized. These customizable templates allow you to deliver more prospecting email touches in a shorter period of time. Even with a customizable template, though, to be effective, you must do research so that the email looks and feels unique to the recipient. It will fall on deaf ears if the recipient doesn't feel that your message was crafted specifically for them. This investment of your precious and limited time is why it is imperative that your prospecting emails convert. Convert means that you generate a response that leads to your desired outcome, an appointment, qualifying information, an introduction to a decision maker, a forward to other influencers, a download of documents, a video view, or a webinar registration, or a sales conversation. If your email doesn't compel the recipient to take action, your time and effort were wasted. This is why investing the time to get your message right is critical. A good prospecting email begins with a great plan. A plan helps you define who will be getting your email, the method or technique you will use to get their attention, the message you will craft to connect with them and compel them to take action, and finally, the action you want the recipient to take. With email prospecting, this is your ammo, A-M-M-O. You don't have to look far to see that planning is rare when it comes to prospecting emails. the vast majority of prospecting emails are awful. Because I'm a business owner and decision maker, I get blasted by prospecting emails from every direction, on my work email, on LinkedIn, on Twitter, and Facebook. I receive dozens each week that are laughable and an embarrassment to the person who sent it and the company that allowed the email to hit my inbox. I'm baffled at how often the salesperson who took the time to send the email did no research. I received an email last week on LinkedIn from a rep at a large sales training company pitching me on sales training. Seriously, a 20-second review of my LinkedIn profile would have saved this rep the bother. But think about what this says about the brand he is selling for. This guy is pitching me on the awesome sales training his firm delivers and demonstrating the worst of sales behaviors. Bad emails destroy your image, credibility, and brand equity. It stuns me that so many companies allow their salespeople to disseminate this crap. Sadly, the majority of sales organizations spend no time teaching their salespeople how to write effective prospecting emails. The worst emails are long, important-sounding pitches using incomprehensible jargon, feature-focused product dumps, cheerleaders who blab on and on about their amazing company, product, and service. The ones that get my name wrong, seriously, it's Jeb, three letters. And the long, boring ones that cause eyes to glaze over. WTF, we live in the age of Twitter, text messaging, infographics, OMGs, and LOLs. Prospects have the attention span of mosquitoes. I delete 99.9% of the emails I get. Every once in a while, though, I'll get a brilliant email that makes me stop in my tracks. This golden email connects with me, makes sense, is relevant, and compels me to respond. The sender took time to research and plan. It all begins with AMMO, A-M-M-O, audience, method, message, and outcome. First, consider your audience. Prospects are people, not robots, so your prospecting email should be authentic and personal. It should connect emotionally. Consider who you are writing to. What is their role? What do you know about their style? How do they consume information? When do they consume information? How familiar are they with you? These questions help you match the tone, structure, and formality to the person to whom you are writing so that it connects. The emotional connection is vital because your email will only be effective if it causes your prospect to take an intended action. The next step is determining your method. Email prospecting methods cross the spectrum from a single standalone email to a multi-email, multi-message strategic prospecting campaign. The method you choose will impact your message and should be driven by your intended audience and defined outcome. Will your message be short and sweet, more detailed, hard-hitting, soft, direct, standalone? A strategic prospecting campaign, nurturing, action-oriented, or cross-platform. This is where planning and strategy are crucial, especially with conquest prospects. You want to avoid being random with your most important opportunities. Next, you want to tailor the message to your audience. The message you craft must be strong enough to compel your prospect to take action. Your prospect wants to know that you get them and their problems, so your message must be relevant to their situation. The most effective way to tailor your message to the person you are writing is to step into their shoes and ask some basic questions. What will get their attention? What's important to them? What will cause them to give you what you are asking for? The key here is taking time to do some basic research, to get to know your prospect, and then use that information as the foundation on which you construct your message. And finally, it's important and crucial that you define your desired outcome. If you don't know what you want, you won't get what you want. If you fail to clearly define what you are asking your prospect to do or provide, they'll be confused and your email won't convert. The four elements of an effective prospecting email. The AMMO framework assists you in planning and developing your strategy. Once you have your plan in place, you'll use the four-step framework to craft your email. Step 1, hook. Get their attention with a compelling subject line and opening sentence. Step 2, relate. Demonstrate that you get them and their problem. Show empathy and authenticity. Step 3, bridge. Connect the dots between their problem and how you can help them. Explain the WIFM, the what's in it for me. And step 4, ask. Be clear and straightforward about the action you want them to take and make it easy for them to do so. Here's an example of an email sent to a chief operating officer of a bank. It leverages the 4-step framework. The subject line, COO, the toughest job in the bank. Lawrence, comma. Ernst & Young recently reported that the COO has the toughest role in the C-suite. The COOs I work with tell me that the increasing complexity of the banking environment has made their job harder and more stressful than ever. My team and I help COOs like you reduce complexity and stress with strategies to optimize growth and profit, mitigate credit risk, allocate resources effectively, and minimize regulatory surprises. While I don't know if we are a good fit for your bank, why don't we schedule a short call to help me learn more about your unique challenges? From there, we can decide if it makes sense to set up a deeper conversation. How about next Thursday at 3 p.m.? David Dare, Senior Account Executive, Juno Systems. Let's break this email down into the 4 parts. Hook. You have about 3 seconds to grab your prospect's attention and hook them. In that blink of an eye, your subject line must compel them to open the email and the first sentence must entice them to keep reading. Kendra Lee, author of The Sales Magnet, calls this the glimpse factor. Prospects choose to read your email for their reasons, not yours, their unique situation and interests. Therefore, the best way to hook them is to make your subject line relevant and the opening sentence about them. Here is an example of a subject line and opening sentence that bombed. This is a real email that was sent to me from a guy named Brandon. Subject line, cloud-based software. Hi, Jeb. I was browsing LinkedIn and wanted to reach out to you. First, the subject line is all about him, not me. Also, never use hi or hello or dear or any other salutation in front of your prospect's name. No one in business does that except salespeople. Hi blank is a complete turnoff for prospects and pegs you immediately as a salesperson. Next, how does the fact that Brandon was browsing LinkedIn in the least bit interest me? And finally, Brandon wanted to reach out. That is past tense and all about Brandon and nothing about me. Now let's take a look at our model email. Subject line, COO, the toughest job in the bank. Lawrence, comma. Ernst & Young recently reported that the COO has the toughest role in the C-suite. This email is being sent to a bank COO. The subject line uses the acronym COO and the word bank. It implies that the COO has the toughest job in the bank. This is compelling because it plays on emotions. We all believe that we have the toughest job in our company. Next, we address our prospect professionally, Lawrence, comma, as if he were a colleague. And finally, the opening sentence is a great hook. Using a credible source, Ernst & Young, we hook the COO by stepping into his shoes and demonstrating that we get him, the toughest role in the C-suite. Relate. Effective emails connect with prospects on an emotional level. The reason is simple. People make decisions based on emotion. The easiest way to connect with your prospect emotionally is to demonstrate that you get them and their problems, that you can relate to their struggles and issues. Here's Brandon's attempt to relate. We build custom software solutions, web, cloud, mobile, desktop. Whether you have need to modernize outdated software, build something new from scratch, or augment your team to meet a critical deadline, I'm confident we can help. So, how does this relate to me or any of my problems? Notice that this paragraph is all about him. It's just a big feature stop. And my reaction? So what? Conversely, in our model email, Dave makes the effort to relate. Of course, since he is not himself a COO, nor has ever been a COO, it would be disingenuous to say that he understands Lawrence's situation. So instead, he uses his relationships with other COOs to demonstrate that he can relate. The COOs I work with tell me that the increasing complexity of the banking environment has made their job harder and more stressful than ever. Bridge.